Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Jim McCarthy. I represent the province of Marinduque, and I intend to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The province's first point is very simple. Patterson v. Dole Foods governs here. There's no subject matter jurisdiction, and the case should be remanded on the authority of that case. Second point is equally simple, although the facts are more complicated, and that is that this Court should expressly vacate the district court's form nonconvenience rulings, because they are unprecedented and they do a great deal of violence to form nonconvenience law in this country. Particularly damaging or worrisome is the holding that is made in the district court that the only issue was whether the alternative form proposed by the defendants is to be considered. And that was followed then by an equally troubling consequence, which was the refusal then to consider the Philippines the natural forum, the site of events in the case. And the result of it all was that a forum nonconvenience, which begins as an equitable doctrine intended to alleviate the consequences of bad forum choices and unfair forum choices by a plaintiff, becomes a vehicle for defense forum shopping. And we think there's a pretty serious aspects to this ruling, and we hope the Court will address them. As to subject matter jurisdiction, I think things are pretty simple and straightforward, and I'd like to go there first. The district court incorrectly held that it had federal subject matter jurisdiction based on the act of state doctrine. While the removal petition spoke in terms of the federal common law of foreign relations, there was no tie to that other than later discussions of the act of state doctrine.
Must this Court address the subject matter jurisdiction issue, or as a result of Sinikin, can we now, even though Sinikin came down after the district court ruled on subject matter jurisdiction, do we have the power and authority to bypass it, so to speak, and go directly to the forum nonconvenience issue?
I think not, Your Honor. In terms of the chronology that you mentioned, there were actually three discussions of subject matter jurisdiction in the district court. The first was prior to Sinikin, where the motion to remand was denied. The second was the forum nonconvenience opinion, which was then followed by a reconsideration opinion. In the reconsideration opinion, which was post-Sinikin, the judge reaffirmed his ruling that there was federal subject matter jurisdiction based on the act of state doctrine. So even after Sinikin, the judge reaffirmed
it. I know that the district court passed on the subject matter jurisdiction issue. I guess my question, refocused, is in light of Sinikin, can we obviate addressing that issue and just deal with the forum nonconvenience issue?
I don't think so, Your Honor. In the face of a ruling that was predicated on the court's assertion of authority over this, not just once, but twice.
Why does it matter if what the Supreme Court has said is when you have this situation of threshold issues that we no longer have what we learned in law school, which is you must do subject matter jurisdiction and then you get to the others? They seem to have thrown that out and they say, you know what, if you can get to the other one easier and you have some tricky jurisdictional questions, take the easy ones. And so why wouldn't we first look and see whether we thought there was an abuse of discretion on the forum nonconvenience?
I think the short answer is because Sinikin itself says that shouldn't happen in this case. Sinikin is part of a triumvirate, as the Court knows, of opinions by Justice Ginsburg, in which she tried to give, and a unanimous Court gave, the district courts a lot more latitude in dealing with questions that were, as a practical matter, better dealt with in less unrealistic ways. In Sinikin, the Court said, as Your Honor indicated, that in some circumstances that it's fine for the judge not to deal with subject matter jurisdiction before dealing with forum nonconvenience. However, as in each of those three opinions, at the end of the opinion, the judge said, this is not the normal rule. This is for the case that fits it. And the criteria that were laid out at the end of Sinikin in that discussion were that if the subject matter jurisdiction issue is difficult, and if the forum nonconvenience issue is easy, then this may be an appropriate case. However, it also says, and Judge Sandoval did this, he looked at subject matter jurisdiction before he looked at the question of form and convenience. So
I had no choice at the time. I mean, at the time that the district court rendered its initial decision, Sonochem was not decided. So it had no alternative but to address the subject matter jurisdiction issue, right?
And I'm not sure they had no alternative because the courts were split over it at that particular point in time. But the fact is that the court then looked at it post-Sinochem and said, no, I that's the right ruling. I believe that the Act of State supports this case, and that's why I have federal jurisdiction. And then in the reconsideration opinion, it also reaffirmed its rulings on form and nonconvenience.
Are you saying that it was an error? It would be an error to look at form nonconvenience first because under Sinochem, subject matter jurisdiction is easy and form nonconvenience is hard? Is that what you're saying? Because we can obviously affirm the district court on any basis established by the record.
I think that if Sinochem is to govern what this court did or the district court did, then it has to govern it by its own terms. And its own terms are that subject matter jurisdiction should be addressed first if in the normal case. What we say is this is a simple case. Subject matter jurisdiction is a simple case. This is the well-pleaded complaint rule. That's it. That's what Patrickson says.
Now, the district court listed three or four incidents where it thought it would have to rule on whether a official act of the sovereign was valid. And so it said that raises a sufficient federal question, an embedded federal question, that would provide it with federal subject matter jurisdiction. Now, why is that not accurate?
It's not accurate for a couple of reasons, Your Honor. First of all, if you consider the complaint as a whole, it's not about the acts of state. It's about the acts of a mining company that caused great damage to the island and to its people.
But
that's what the story is completely.
Won't the district court have to rule on whether the Marcus regime was invalid in its partnership in Marcopper and its issuance of permits and its preventing its environmental organization agency from stopping the activities?
No, Your Honor, it won't. And there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, because, as I say, the case is not about the government's acts. It's about the acts of the mining company. Secondly, these are the acts of President Marcos, and as the complaint itself points out, these are in his own economic self-interest because he extorted a large percentage of the mine as a benefit for doing the deal with Placer Dome. Now, there are all sorts of cases in Ninth Circuit and elsewhere which point out that the acts of state defense and the act of state issue does not exist in these Marcos cases where he acted for self-interest. Could I interject here?
I mean, isn't at least one of the allegations that the Aquino regime also prevented the environmental agency from taking appropriate steps?
Only later is there a reference to the Aquino regime. But that's not decisive as for a complaint. The question is, in the well-completed complaint rule is, does the court have to rule on an essential issue of the plaintiff's causes of action? Supreme Court reaffirmed that issue yesterday. And so it needs to be, you know, we need to stay focused on that issue. Is there an essential portion of the plaintiff's complaint against the mining companies that has to be ruled on? Now, in addition to Marcos, I think we have to remember that the act of state is a judicial creation intended to protect the foreign policy prerogatives of the country. This is not a situation where there's a U.S. and a Philippine difference as to the evils of President Marcos or the evils of what he did or the plunder that he took on. There's no interest to be protected here by the judiciary.
Let me ask this. I just want to clarify something. We have the well-pleaded complaint principle that we ought to be dealing with. I think we acknowledge that. Your complaint, it seems to me, reads basically allegations of negligence, breach of contract, what we would consider common law state torts if this was a domestic case, but I guess it's under the Philippine law that you're talking about. You don't really rely upon whether or not permits were granted or not granted, whether permission was given or not given to dump into a particular locale. That has nothing to do with your well-pleaded complaint, as I read it, or am I misreading it?
No, you're reading it correctly, Your Honor. Our complaint is about the tragic general depredation, three cataclysmic events that occurred, the dumping into Kalantan Bay, the trashing of the Mopac River with a dam bursting and collapse that was under their management and construction, and in addition, the Boak River disaster when they...
Even if the permits were given, it doesn't really give license to the mining company to pollute, you know, the environment.
No, not at all, Your Honor. I would be shocked to see a permit that said, oh, by the way, trash those two rivers.
So if there are these issues that are being raised in this case in terms of the activities of the government arguably in granting permits or not, that would be by means of defense, as an affirmative defense, which has nothing to do with the well-pleaded complaint, I take it.
Exactly, Your Honor, and that's the point that was reaffirmed yesterday. So there's not going to be an active state issue in this case, and there aren't any pleaded. And because that's the sole basis for jurisdiction here, there is no jurisdiction. There is no subject matter jurisdiction. I have to say one or two words about form nonconvenience, which are really important. The key thing to keep in mind here...
It could be argued that the form nonconvenience issue is more complicated in terms of having to balance all these various interests and factors of the public and the private interests than the simple act of state issue, which the district court may have gotten wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why this is the... is the standard case that Sinochem referred to in the end. This is the simple subject matter jurisdiction. The more difficult form non should be decided in that order. Now, Judge Sandoval did do that.
I mean, the reality is that, as a practical matter, if you would win on the act of state, then you're back in Nevada State Court and you have these very same issues, right?
But under different under different law and the exclusion of the Philippines, which is the critical problem in the form nonconvenience issue, where the judge issued a new rule of law that foreclosed any consideration of the full of Philippines, that I do not believe will occur.
Tell me why you think he foreclosed. Can you go back to the Philippines now?
Well, conceivably.
If assuming you had a claim, I know you may be unsuccessful one, but what precludes you from going today?
Conceivably, we could, Your Honor, but our point is we're...
So then what's the harm? I mean, in other words, The ultimate ruling is Nevada's not the place for you. But why couldn't you just pick up and go right to the Philippines?
You can't get process in the Philippines to this day?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You can't serve process and you can't get jurisdiction in the Philippines over the defendant?
No, Judge Sandoval held that was an
open
question.
That's why you can't go back to the Philippines.
No, it's not that. It's just we're in a perfectly valid forum. We did what you're supposed to do. We followed the defendant to where they were. We sued them. It's a standard case. And we did it because they'd fled the Philippines.
I understand that, but I guess I don't understand why you can't sue them in the Philippines today.
It is entirely possible, Your Honor, that we could do that. But we've chosen an entirely valid form.
Right, but in other words, that's why I'm having a little trouble understanding why you're complaining about the judge not dealing with the Philippines. Because what the judge did is say you can't come to Nevada, and in the scheme of things, British Columbia is a legitimate forum. But nothing there that I read precludes you from today, simultaneously, tomorrow, picking up and suing in the Philippines. I mean, you have to run through all the procedural gauntlets, but not this judge didn't preclude you from that, did he?
No, but this judge precluded the consideration of the Philippines in the forum nonconvenience analysis, and that totally and irreparably skewed it, because even the judge's own findings specified in great detail the superiority of the Philippines as a forum. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I could, Your Honor.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Jerry Gansfried for the defendants. The core of this case is the fact that it's a non-U.S. plaintiff suing non-U.S. defendants on non-U.S. causes of action. None of the claims stated in the complaint as causes of action are stated under U.S. law. No acts are alleged to have taken place in the United States, and there's no injury alleged in the United States.
What's the act of state, though, in the complaint? Where in the complaint do you define the act of state?
Well, in a couple of places. I think in many respects the terminology implication of foreign relations of the United States is a more accurate description. Some of the cases use act of state to...
The Supreme Court has said, you know, that simply because something implicates foreign policy does not mean, you know, that it implicates act of state or any of the other related doctrines of international law. So maybe it would be helpful to me if I could look at the complaint and match this up.
I'd like to be able to do that in two steps, and I certainly want to.
Well, why don't you just start with step one, which is to point me where in the complaint to look.
In the complaint, absolutely. Let me start first with the prayer for relief. And the complaint that I'm looking at is the original state complaint, that the one that was removed. So it's at starts at page, well, the notice of removal is at 3017. The complaint itself is at 22 of the excerpt of record. Prayer for relief is on 3075. They ask for an injunction from the court directing Placer Dome, which was the only defendant at the time that the case was removed, to undertake and complete, and I'll skip down, the environmental cleanup of the affected areas, restore the natural resources of Marinduque, including, not limited to, a couple of itemized places, talks about cleaning up rivers, downstream coastal areas, and surrounding areas. Environmental cleanup must include, among other things, ensuring potable water in the region. That, an injunction directing activity within the sovereign territory of another country, dealing with its navigable waters, dealing with the provision of potable waters, is something that goes to, it's not may implicate foreign relations of the United States. It directly goes to questions of foreign relations.
The Act of State doctrine, as defined in Kirkpatrick, says it's a rule of decision. The acts of foreign sovereigns within their own jurisdiction shall be valid. So there's no federal, I'm having trouble finding a federal question. There's no federal cause of action. You concur with that, correct? There's no federal cause of action.
They state no cause of action.
You're looking for some sort of embedded federal question, as in Grable, that's substantial and that's actually disputed, that would implicate this rule of decision that the acts of foreign sovereign within their own jurisdiction shall be valid. I don't see how the prayer for relief implicates that rule of decision. There may be a political question, so some sort of abstention doctrine might be applicable, but that's not raising a federal question.
The initial question of, as between a state court and a federal court, which one is the appropriate forum for deciding the scope of the act of state, the scope of the federal question, namely foreign relations, is properly a federal court issue.
Decided by the state court as well as the federal court. It
doesn't have to be exclusive federal jurisdiction for removal. It simply has to present a federal question that comes within the jurisdiction of the federal courts.
Are there other parts of the complaint that you would direct us to other than the prayer?
Oh, yes. Well, let me go back to the initial overturning in the 60s of a presidential decree from the 1930s, which is what initially what allowed mining within the province from 1932 through 1960.
They're not asking that be overturned. Where do you say that, you know, they're seeking the invalidation of a permit? And even if that were the case, would that be an affirmative defense?
But it's not simply something that we are bringing brand new to the case as a defense. It is something that is pleaded in the complaint, and is necessarily part of the complaint.
What paragraph is that?
The proclamation, that's paragraph 7, which is on page 3028. Marcos overturned the 1932 presidential proclamation. Bear in mind, and I'll go through some other paragraphs as well, but bear in mind, after 1980...
Paragraph 7?
Yes.
During most of those 30-plus years,
I hope I have the right page. I may have given the wrong paragraph. Paragraph 41, I'm sorry, on page 3028.
So, I mean, that's Marcos did his way by overturning the Forest Reserves Protected Status. That's like saying, you know, in 1945, following the war, the president did X. It's an historical allegation. It doesn't have anything to do with implicating the government.
That was the action that permitted mining in the province.
So what?
So what?
The claim is that the mining should not have happened in the province, that the mining should not have happened in a particular way, and that, of course, gets into the various other questions that come up, not only involving decisions by President Marcos, but also the agency, the NWA PCC, the PAB, and the complaint itself directly refers to actions and decisions by President Marcos, President Reyes, President Arroyo, and President Aquino.
So what's the federal question there? What exactly is the federal question?
The federal question is that the case goes directly to the question of should the United States have any role in the regulation of extraterritorial activities attributed to foreign companies in a third foreign country.
So, the United States isn't having any role. The question is there a federal question that can put you in federal court? And I don't understand how, as you talk about it, that doesn't really implicate a federal question. When the United States isn't involved, you have this citizens and the Republic suing this mining company saying you basically polluted and pillaged our area. That's the claim.
It goes directly to foreign relations. Let me point to paragraph 193 of the complaint, page 3054, where the very subject of this environmental issue that is the underlying issue in the case was the subject of discussions between Philippine President Arroyo and the Canadian Prime Minister in 2002. So, in terms of implicating the foreign relations of the United States, the question is, will the court decide that the United States should eject itself into those issues of intergovernmental, involving two foreign governments, intergovernmental foreign relations issues?
I mean, that's actually, you're framing it as a jurisdictional question. It's either, does the federal court have jurisdiction, which is a question before us, or should the government abstain from considering this question under political question doctrine, you know, Baker v. Carr? So it's not a federal question arising from the complaint. It's the subject matter jurisdiction question that we face at the threshold.
I want to do two things. One, there's another aspect of foreign relations law that comes into this, and that is that we have a case in which the province is challenging actions, the province of Marinduque is challenging actions taken by the national government of the Philippines over a period of many years.
That's the closest I've heard to an active state problem.
Well,
and all this other stuff,
I hope I began by saying there were multiple ones, and I've been.
But then that's
trying to
invalidate those actions. Look, if I may, about Patrickson. It seems that that's the Ninth Circuit case that we have to focus on, even though it's not factually directly on point. The language of Judge Kosinski, I think, is important for us to discuss. My sense of Patrickson is that the Ninth Circuit has taken issue with some of the more liberal decisions by the sister circuits, like the Second Circuit, God help me. Judge Kosinski says, no, you know, we're not going to broadly construe the active state doctrine. We're going to take a more circumscribed view of it. And Patrickson clearly says, and I'm quoting, that nothing in the plaintiff's complaint turns on the validity or invalidity of any act of a foreign state. I focus on that. I don't see where we have here, under the well-pleaded complaint rule, any attack on the validity or invalidity of any act of a foreign state. Let me go further. Okay. Patrickson put some meat to the bones. It contrasted situations where the active state doctrine is used affirmatively as the basis of a claim, such as where, and it gave examples, the claim raises as a necessary element the question whether to honor the request of a foreign government. We don't have that here. or where a plaintiff has established title as an element of his conversion claim and title rests on a foreign expropriation decree like the Cuba case, perhaps, in situations where the active state doctrine serves as a defense. It dichotomizes the difference when, you know, you're using, you know, the issue of the foreign state, so to speak, scenario as a sword compared to when it can be raised by way of defense. And it just seems to me when the Ninth Circuit goes on to then say that we're not going to be as generous, perhaps, as the other circuits, we're going to take a more circumscribed view of the active state, that I think it puts you out of the loop here as I read the Patrickson case. Do you wish to comment on that?
Well, in Patrickson, among other things, you did have state law claims alleged under Hawaii law.
It's not exactly the same. I understand that. But the language here and the concept behind it and the jurisprudence there, I think, is very relevant here.
It is. It's the Ninth Circuit. And so that is what we're going to be applying. But in Patrickson, you had an entirely different situation, and it's narrowing to the active state doctrine. And I think that what I'm suggesting is that the notion of foreign policy, foreign relations law of the United States, is a somewhat broader concept than that. Let me also get to what the plaintiff had to say. We talk about the master of the complaint and the well-pleaded complaint. The plaintiff repeatedly told the court that there was no subject matter jurisdiction issue, that the court could find subject matter jurisdiction. Page 3014, they tell the court in the statement on remand.
Right, Marinduque, that's the one thing that parties can't do is fix jurisdiction.
No, but they can describe their complaint. And they described their complaint in a way that made it quite clear that foreign relations issues, active state issues, are in the complaint. They said that, in fact, at page 2185, where they said the reason they chose state court over federal court was to avoid the time and money-wasting controversies over whether the action could be made to fit within the jurisdiction of the federal courts. That goes more to the forum nonconvenience and Sinochem issue, but I mention it in this context as well. They also,
if I may, with the indulgence of my colleagues, I think we spent a significant amount of time exploring the issue of jurisdiction, and you only have a minute and 25 seconds left, and I'm curious about something. You guys are big boys. You've been around the block a long, long time. This is a long pending piece of litigation. I don't think we can fully understand all the nuances in terms of strategy by brilliant counsel here, but it seems to me that you wanted to get into the federal system and get away from the jaws of the Nevada State Court for one principal purpose, to then use the federal jurisdiction to apply for your forum nonconvenience. Is this a matter of trial strategy? Is that what you planned all the time to do? And is that why you wanted to invoke federal jurisdiction? You don't think the Nevada court can make that determination?
Their determination,
in other words, for that sole strategic reason, correct? To be able to put forth before a federal court your forum nonconvenience argument. I just want to know whether that was your strategy.
Well, I don't want to say it was not my decision, but it was there was prior counsel in the case. So if you're asking
for
what was the strategy,
listen to me. You wasted all the time. You could have made the same forum nonconvenience article before the state court, perfectly competent to make that determination. Instead, you decided to come here, invoke a questionable jurisdictional issue, and then move for forum nonconvenience.
But bear in mind that at the time of the removal, Sinochem had not been decided. So the question of
it doesn't matter. You still, you know, we're going to move for forum nonconvenience with or without Sinochem.
And second, there is the time limit for removal. The face of the complaint, and if I can quickly refer to page.
You have to remove. In other words, you preferred federal court for whatever.
Yeah, 2084, 2085. The plaintiff's comment to the district court, it says, the question is whether Placer Dome's claim of foreign relations subject matter jurisdiction has met its burdens. Has it met its burden? Yes and no. Placer Dome does hit on some good points, including that the.
Let me get to the bottom of the thing on the forum nonconvenience. One of the primary complaints of the plaintiffs is that the district court ignored the Philippines in the calculus. What is your response to that?
The two-step process for form nonconvenience is, first, is there an adequate alternate form? The Philippines doesn't satisfy that standard because there's no jurisdiction over the defendants in the Philippines.
He says that there is jurisdiction now, though. I don't understand.
It's been tried once, correct? In terms of, has the Philippine court ruled there's no jurisdiction?
In the Natal case, the decision by the, not these plaintiffs, but a civil case relating to some of the same allegations in the Philippine courts, in the Natal case, which is in the excerpt of record, I think, at three different places. The court says that you can't make Placer Dome a defendant in the case. Placer Dome is not there.
Yes, yes. Are you willing to try this case in the Philippines? It seems that that's the obvious correct venue here. Everything happened there.
We're not subject to the to jurisdiction. The judge did not transfer this case anywhere.
I understand.
The plaintiffs can file tomorrow in any court that has jurisdiction over
I guess I just wonder, would you be willing to have this case tried in the Philippines? I'm just curious.
It's really not a question of willingness. The Philippines courts have decided that there is no jurisdiction, that Placer Dome cannot be served.
We could possibly give you a choice. It seems to me clearly the right venue is the Philippines. The question is how or if at all you should get there. If we were to say, look, your choice is to go to Nevada or wherever, or go to the Philippines, and you can, you know, go to the Philippines if you wish to, I guess you have a jurisdictional problem, you'd have to accept, you know, service or process there, whatever, but we can possibly condition that. Would you be willing to do that?
There's no case that in which a court has compelled a defendant to consent to jurisdiction in a forum in which there is no jurisdiction.
We can give you a choice.
I think this gets directly to a problem that the Supreme Court was addressing in the Piper Aircraft case. Utilization and the misutilization of United States courts as a tool, as a mechanism for coercing foreign defendants who are not U.S. defendants, but foreign defendants to be coerced to go to jurisdictions over which, one, there is no jurisdiction over them, and two, it has already been determined by the local jurisdiction that there is no, that the jurisdiction doesn't exist.
We've been trying to escape process for 40 years here.
I think we've got your points in mind. Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Your Honors, a couple of quick bullet points. In Natal, the ruling was not that there was no jurisdiction. It was that the lawyer, after many, many requests by the court, had not bothered to produce any proof of jurisdiction. So there was never a contested issue of fact. And that's the only case. Other cases, there are ongoing efforts to serve them. How they'll turn out, I don't know. I can't say to this court. The reference to Piper at the end triggered something in my mind. Piper says you can't just go to Pennsylvania and sue the company's headquarters because all the events occurred in Scotland. That's our case here. They want to go to the corporate headquarters, except if you read the two opinions, Judge Sandoval got the corporate headquarters wrong. He got it wrong in his original opinion. Then we, in our motion for reconsideration, we pointed out he'd gotten it wrong, that in fact they were in Ontario, not British Columbia. And he said, okay, I'm still sending it there because British Columbia may have an interest in the court of an Ontario corporation. That's the sole basis for sending it to Canada. Piper rejected the whole proposition. It said send it to the situs of events, which is what we've proposed.
Well, nobody needs to send it anywhere. You already told me that you can go to the Philippines of your own accord and take your chances with, you know, jurisdiction.
There is one problem there, Your Honor, and that is, as a matter of Philippine law, that they have an anti-form shopping rule that says if there's a pending case in another jurisdiction that they are not going to accept the filing of a Philippine case at the same time.
Okay, but let's assume, just for talking purposes, that the district court were affirmed here, then you wouldn't have a case, pending case in another jurisdiction, correct?
Right.
And that would obviate any problem with going to the Philippines.
Of course, our very strong argument is that for both subject matter reasons and for the forum nonconvenience reasons, this court should not affirm. And in fact, the precedents that would be set forth in the forum nonconvenience context would be really quite dangerous going forward in the future. There are serious problems with a rule that restricts a district court's ability to apply equity. That's what this rule does. The defendant, by the nature of the motion, gets to say what the district judge will consider or not consider. Forum nonconvenience is about equity. It's about equity towards the defendants. It's about equity towards the plaintiffs. And what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to come in first and say, this forum, Nevada, is inequitable. Well, I provided the court with a record copy of something where they brag about the close and long and deep associations with Nevada, but that's not what they're telling the courts. They're saying it's inconvenient to be in Nevada. Then you're supposed to say, okay, let's weigh all the factors, all the factors. All is in Piper. All is in every bit of litigation. All the factors weren't weighed here because the judge believed incorrectly, I don't think there's a bad motive to it, that he had to consider only what the defendant suggested. But that leaves the range of equity in the hands of the defendant. And in this case, and in most cases involving multinational corporations, that means, because multinational corporations have many possible operations they can point to, that they have a wider range than a typical corporation of saying, no, you have to sue me there. We sued Barrick in the center of its operations. You'll see that from this. It's the biggest single place that they operate in the world. Canada is trivial by comparison. It is simply a headquarters that could be placed anywhere. It's the analogy is to an offshore corporation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
The case argued is submitted. Provincial Government versus Placer Dome. Thanks both counsel for your argument this morning.